All right, welcome to the show, everybody. I got a great one for you. So Rabbi Shmuley and Cenk Uygur went at it, round two. It was absolutely unhinged. And I'm going to show you a bunch of the clips, and it is fun. So buckle up for that. Rabbi Shmuley is probably the most unhinged person online, and that says something because you know how much of a cesspool online can be. So we'll dive into that in just a second. We also have a potential Trump bankruptcy may be imminent. So he's gone bankrupt. His businesses have at least six or seven times, but personal bankruptcy he's never gone through before. He's now put in a position because of some of these civil cases where he has to put up hundreds of millions of dollars by March 25th. And he apparently can't secure a bond for that. So he may have to liquidate a bunch of his properties. This is a big, big deal. So I'll give you the specifics of that as well. We have Trump makes an insane comment about Jewish Democrats. You're not going to want to miss that. The Boeing whistleblower, we have updates. The guy who was basically explaining all of the wrongdoing behind the scenes, and he wound up dead. You'll never guess what's being reported now. This is dark, man. Then we'll get to the Supreme Court and their new insane immigration ruling and more. So don't go anywhere. We got a lot to get to. Everybody, do me a big favor. Please subscribe to the channel. Helps us out massively, costs you nothing. And a big thank you to everybody who supports this show on Patreon or tips with the thanks button on YouTube. Remember, I've never talked to an advertiser. I'm very proud of that fact, but that means, you know, you guys have to help fund it from the ground up, and many of you do, and I'm deeply, deeply appreciative from the bottom of my heart. So if anybody would like to do a $2 donation a month or $5 donation a month, Patreon link is below. All right, let's go ahead and kick it off here. So Cenk Uygur went on Piers Morgan's show, and there's an interesting backstory here because Cenk was told, hey, we're going to have you with some other guests. I actually don't know what guest it was supposed to be, but they pulled out of the show. So who ended up filling in at the last minute? Rabbi Shmuley. Now, the last time Cenk was on Piers Morgan debating Rabbi Shmuley, it was a mess, to say the least. I'm putting that kindly by saying it's a mess. And, you know, I certainly got the sense watching it, Cenk is like, never again with this freak. Not a chance. But he's a man of his word, said he'd come on. They switched the guests up on him at the last minute. He was like, all right, I guess I'll do it. And then we get just a, I'm not even going to try to explain it. Let's just play and we'll break it down as we go here. There's a lot of stuff to respond to. By the way, take note, Piers is also totally sick of Rabbi Shmuley shit. The last time Rabbi Shmuley was on, Piers afterward was like, all you do is ad hominem attacks. They didn't do it to you, you did it to them. So like, you know, get your shit together. So you can see even Piers is like, God damn it, I hate this guy. All right, let's dive in.
Cenk, let me ask you first of all, a lot of heat coming from America towards Benjamin Netanyahu, with Chuck Schumer basically implying that he should be replaced as leader in a new election as soon as possible. What do you make of that?
Yeah, it's unprecedented. I think people need to understand what a giant deal this is. The leadership of either party, Democrats or Republicans, have never, ever broken with Israel. Chuck Schumer is one of the biggest supporters of Israel in the whole country. For him to come out and say enough is enough, you've got to turn around, you've got to call new elections, and Netanyahu is damaging Israel is an enormous moment in American-Israeli relations. And he's not alone. Thomas Friedman, also an enormous Israeli supporter, wrote an article in the New York Times saying that Israel is now radioactive. And so these are not enemies of Israel. And the same goes for me. Allies of Israel saying, please turn around because this is not good for, like, look, I care deeply about the Palestinians. I'm not sure the Schumers of the world or the Bidens of the world have ever shown that. But all of us care about Israel as well. And this is catastrophic for Israel's reputation. And you do not want Israel to be alone in the world again. 21,000 women and children have been slaughtered at a minimum.
Yeah, the number I see is 40,000, according to Euromed Monitor. 92% are civilians. So he's using a very conservative number there, but the point still stands.
1.1 million Palestinians are starving as we speak now. You must turn around. Otherwise, this is horrific, not just for those starving, innocent human beings, but also for Israel itself.
Rabbi Shmuley, I mean, you've been obviously extremely passionate in your support of what Israel has been doing in response to that terror attack on October the 7th. But attacking Rafah, which is a refugee camp right now with 1.5 million people, the vast majority of whom are completely innocent people, many, many, many hundreds of thousands of women and children, this is going to be a catastrophe if Netanyahu goes ahead with attacking Rafah, isn't it?
The catastrophe for the Palestinian people is Hamas, Hamas.
They're like the doll with the drawstring. You pull it, and they say the same thing over and over and over. I don't know how they haven't evolved yet to this point. You can't just always say the word Hamas and think that's a debate ender. It is not a debate ender. Oh, it's so weak. It's literally the first 3 seconds of something he said, and I'm already, like, absolutely losing my shit watching this.
If Israel does not destroy the last two military battalions who are encamped in Rafah, who, without whom there cannot be more terror attacks, will have peace in the Middle East, it's a catastrophe for the Palestinians, whose food was stolen for 18 years before this war by the leadership, Ismail Haniyeh, who's worth $7 billion. Where was the outrage of Cenk Aygur back then? How is it that these guys are flying around in private jets while the Palestinians were suffering for 18 years with no hope? This is not about caring about the Palestinians. It's about pure anti-Semitism. Let's look at...
He's got nothing. Hamas, Hamas, Hamas. You're an anti-Semite. It literally doesn't matter. His whole thing was about how I'm not an enemy of Israel. I actually am pro-Israel, which is why I'm saying this is all disastrous, because your reputation is destroyed and you're going to be alone in the world with nobody on your side. That's bad for you, Israel. His whole thing was how he's pro-Israel. He's anti-Semite. And by the way, the idea that Hamas is stealing all of the food. There are 30,000 Hamas members. There's 2.3 million people in Gaza, or at least there were before, you know, over 30,000 of them were murked. So you do the math on that. 30,000 people are taking all the food that would go to 2.3 million people. It's such a shitty argument. It's offensive.
March 14th, 2024, a date that will live in infamy in the annals of the United States Senate, where a Senate majority leader called for regime change of the only democracy in the Middle East. By the way, I want to congratulate, you know...
Staring in Lebanon.
Vladimir Putin, a real nail-biter yesterday, where he only won by 90% of the vote. Schumer did not call for regime change in Russia. He didn't call for regime change. Bashar al-Assad, Israel's next-door neighbor, who killed 600,000 Arabs. He didn't call for regime change in Turkey. My friend Cenk was born...
By the way, yeah, that's the problem, is the U.S. isn't pro-regime change enough. That's the problem. By the way, the U.S. government did try to topple the Syrian government. But this is his argument. You're calling for Netanyahu to step down in Israel? Why aren't you calling for every government anywhere that's ever done any bad thing to step down? Well, first of all, they do, right? But second of all, like, that's the point about how isolated Israel now is on the world stage. And what Shmuley doesn't understand, because he's an idiot, is that this is all kabuki theater. So ideally, the U.S. government wants Netanyahu to step down. Somebody could take his place, and then they will pretend like, oh, if you reel in the genocide, like 5%, we'll act like you're moving in the right direction, all the problems are fixed, we'll open up the floodgates again to send even more money, maybe we'll double the money going in, double the weapons, etc. So it's all kabuki theater. Pin it all on Netanyahu, he's the scapegoat, he's the fall guy, somebody replaces Netanyahu just like Netanyahu, but the U.S. now can put lipstick on the pig to act like, hey, we got rid of Netanyahu, but he's so stupid, he thinks that Chuck Schumer doing this kabuki theater about Netanyahu stepping down is like Chuck Schumer is now turning to be pro-Hamas and anti-Israel. You are the world's biggest jackass.
In Turkey, where you have the Turkish tyrant Erdogan, who slaughters and imprisons journalists. He didn't call for regime change in
Qatar. So what does that tell you? What does that tell you? Okay, but Rabbi Shmuley, what does that tell you about the strength of feeling in America, amongst senior politicians, about what its great ally Israel is currently doing? Their initial full-scale support.
It's a fair question, Pearson. By the way, thank you for having me on again. It tells me that President Biden, who's a good man, but he's 81 years old, has allowed one city in the United States, Dearborn, Michigan. Michigan is the critical swing state, where you have a congresswoman named Rashida Tlaib, who is a dyed-in-the-wool anti-Semite. Not anti...
I can't.
anti-Israel, a Jew hater. He has allowed one city to dictate the presidential election. This is all about presidential politics. And Chuck Schumer allowed himself to be Joe Biden's court Jew. They needed a Jew to get on the Senate floor and say that the people of Israel will no longer be a democracy. You know, to my friend Cenk, the last time we were on, I said to him, you withdrew your presidential campaign. I'm sorry that you were outpolled by even, you know, SpongeBob SquarePants, but you went back from your presidential campaign. You, if you want, you could run as the chief information officer for Hamas because you parrot their lies about Israel's being genocidal. But I will tell you one thing.
All he has is Hamas, 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 you're an anti-Semite, and ad hominem attacks. And by the way, I've noticed even people who are massively pro-Israel are like, I don't want anything to do with this guy. This guy's a fucking idiot. This guy does not represent me.
Do not care one bit that the leadership of Hamas have stolen the future of the Palestinian people for 18 years. And only when Hamas is destroyed and removed.
All right, Rabbi Shmuley, I think, look, a lot of people will share your concern about what Hamas has done in those 18 years. They will also think that Netanyahu has basically admitted that he was perfectly happy with Hamas running Gaza because it separated the Palestinians from Hamas and the Palestinian Authority. But you haven't, in all that rant you've just unleashed about this, you haven't actually answered my question. And I will make it, you know, personal to you. You're a rabbi. When you see a refugee camp, that is what it is. When you see a refugee camp with 1.5 million people, they've all been sent there and displaced there by Israel, by the bombardment in the north. When you see this and you see Netanyahu saying, we're going to go in for several weeks, surely you don't think this is a good idea for Israel, that you're going to see the wholesale slaughter of innocent women and children?
You know, it's a fair question. Again, Pierce, let me be clear. War is horrible. War is terrible. Israel has said that they will move those 1.5 million civilians, but war is always terrible. Has Netanyahu made mistakes, especially when he allowed Qatar to continue to give Hamas $1 billion a year? Yes, he did make those mistakes. I'm personally friendly with Netanyahu. I was critical of that decision at the time. I remain really? So. But let's be clear. Without 700,000 Americans dying in the civil war, which is atrocious, we might have had slavery, God forbid. If we didn't destroy...
He's comparing the genocide and ethnic cleansing of Palestinians to the U.S. Civil War. Oh, and by the way, notice, oh, war is terrible. War is horrible. This is when he's asked about all these innocent Palestinians who have died and will continue to die. Is that his line over October 7th? Is he like, look, October 7th, I mean, war is nasty. War is gross. War is terrible. But, you know, this is war. Does he say that about October 7th? No, it's terrorism, war crimes, violation of international law, barbarians. But when it's Israel doing the war crimes, violating international law, it's, bro, I mean, we're trying, bro. We're trying our best, bro.
There was starvation in Berlin. Innocent, beautiful German children. They weren't Nazis. Those who were conscripted into the Hitler Youth. And by the way, Young Turks is essentially the Hitler Youth. I don't know why Cenk uses that name still. He's going back. They were the ones who perpetrated the Armenian genocide.
These German children were not.
It's fucking guy, man. Holy shit. Holy shit.
Japanese children were not responsible. But without destroying Hamas, there will be war for the next 100 years.
And let me just say that you've gone once again very ad hominem with the other guest when he hadn't on you.
I'm not going ad hominem. You cannot use a
He just said he's a Nazi. I'm not going ad hominem, bro. I just said that his thing is like the Hitler Youth, bro. I'm just bro.
Title name for your podcast.
Let me go to Cenk.
I'm sorry.
Cenk, your response.
Yeah, look, Piers, I wasn't supposed to come on with this guy. I was supposed to come on with a different guest. I'm never coming on with him again. He's all he has is ad hominem. So you ask him about 21 to 25,000 women.
Are you really that afraid of me?
God, he won't shut the fuck up.
Please, Rabbi Shmuley.
You say you're not going to
let him speak. Let him speak, please.
Come on, Cenk.
Let him speak.
Cenk, you ran for president.
Let him speak, please, Rabbi
Shmuley. Come on.
Look, when you're Piers Morgan is the ultimate like enlightened centrist fence sitter civility guy, and he's had it. He's had enough of Rabbi Shmuley. Jesus.
Run.
Rabbi, let him speak. Cenk.
Okay. Rabbi Shmuley says he wants to murder more women and children and then calls us genocidal because we're trying to protect women and children both in Israel and in Palestine. You see me sticking up for Israel when Hamas attacks. You see me criticizing Hamas, saying they're terrible. I don't agree with them. You see me trying to protect innocent lives on both sides. Then this guy comes on. He says, kill more Palestinians. We killed, 700,000, he said, in another war. So are you going to go to 700,000 in Gaza?
The Rabbi Civil War, Shmuley. For God's sake. I wish you knew a little bit of American history.
Rabbi Shmuley, who says murder, 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 murder. That's all this rabbi.
Genocidal
I've got to say one more.
murderers, Jews are killers.
No, shut up.
Pierce, can I ask this man one question? The man
who
ran for president.
No, you can't ask anything.
I'm going to ask you guys, is Rabbi Shmuley playing like a WWE heel character, or is this who he really is? Because it certainly comes across like he's playing a WWE heel, doesn't it?
Whatever, do is lie.
Shut up and everything. Listen, stop your ad hominems. I want to ask one question, Pierce.
Ad hominems.
If you care about the Palestinians, I have one question. Why don't you call, Cenk, for the unconditional surrender of Hamas today, the release of the hostages, and the war will be over? I am challenging you now to call for the unconditional surrender.
Why don't you call for the unconditional surrender of Netanyahu and the IDF and all the generals in Israel who are doing a literal genocide and ethnic cleansing right now? Why don't you call for them to step down? I'll give you the opportunity right now to call for them to step down. Fucking crickets. Right? Please spare me with the moral grandstanding. Do you want to have a serious conversation or do you not want to have a serious conversation? The fact of the matter is, this isn't a thing. You're never going to get Hamas all stepped down today and everybody lived happily ever after. You idiots just created five times as many Hamas by creating so many orphan kids and killing mothers and fathers and uncles and aunts and grandmas. The idea that what, you're going to just be done with Palestinian hardliners now when you're creating more of them day after day after? Fuck off. He's so stupid. Oh my God.
Challenges. And I'm not going to answer any of your stupid questions.
Will you do so or not?
No, I'm not entertaining this.
Pierce, why won't he answer the question?
Okay, he won't shut up. No, there's no talking to this guy.
Let me check. Let me ask Cenk. I want to play you a clip, Cenk, of Netanyahu at the weekend. This is what he said.
Okay, can I just, before you do, Pierce?
Yeah.
Look, I hope that everybody in the audience understands that this guy isn't helping Israel at all. He's putting a very, very ugly face to Israel. And I hope that you don't make the mistake out in the audience of thinking that everyone in Israel, hold on, let me finish.
Yeah.
Or that anyone else that is Jewish thinks anything like your Rabbi Shmuley does. My Jewish friends are horrified by the death toll.
Do me a favor, Cenk.
Rabbi doesn't care at all. He's the most immoral man I have ever met in my life.
You cannot be... I asked a simple question.
Let Piers ask the question.
I would like to play what Netanyahu said and ask Cenk for his reaction.
Some people have a knack for opening their mouths and talking at the exact wrong time. Like, there's a natural ebb and flow to a conversation or an interview or a debate, and it's like a dance almost. There's a rhythm to it. It's like, you say something, I say something. You say something a little longer, I say something a little shorter. You say something a little shorter, then I say something longer. There's like a flow to it. This motherfucker is like, flow my ass cheeks. No, I'm just going to jump in at the exact wrong time every time. And by the way, even if he was saying things that were intelligent, which he's not, even then it would come across like he's an idiot and he's losing because he has no understanding of the cadence and the rhythm and the flow to how to have a debate.
When people tell us don't go into Rafah, that's like telling the Allies, listen, don't go into Berlin, leave a quarter of the Nazi army intact.
God.
You know, that's ridiculous. You know, if we leave a quarter of the Hamas fighting terrorist battalions in place, they'll regroup, reconquer Gaza, and in fact, perpetrate once again what they vowed to do, which is to repeat the October 7th massacre over and over and over again.
You're not killing Hamas. 92% innocent civilian kill rate. And by the way, don't let them fool you. They're doing it on purpose. They want to do an ethnic cleansing. They want to do a genocide. They are purposefully killing civilians. All this, Hamas, we're going to go after Hamas. You can't leave the Nazis. You're not even getting the bad guys.
Cenk, your reaction to that.
Yeah, so this guy has been justifying the slaughter of Palestinians from day one. You have to understand something. In order for Israel to get peace, which should be the goal of its leaders and its citizens, and it is certainly of its citizens, but I don't know, definitely not its leaders at this point in time. You have to get the peace as you did with Egypt. With Egypt, there are no more bombs. You've had peace for over 40 years, and all of the doubters and all the right-wingers and all the warmongers told you, oh, Egypt will never listen. Egypt will keep trying to kill you. Egypt's going to try to kill all the Jews. But they didn't. The warmongers were lying to you, just like they're lying to you today. And why are they doing that? They're doing it because they want to remain in power. Netanyahu knows the minute that this war, and by the way, it's not just Netanyahu, it's also the leaders of Hamas. They should have taken a ceasefire earlier. They held it up on absurd grounds of not releasing the names of the hostages.
I'm sorry, but in all these negotiations, the sticking point for Hamas is we want a permanent ceasefire. In other words, fully stop the ethnic cleansing and the genocide. But Netanyahu and the Israeli government are insistent on only a 6-week ceasefire, which means what? What happens after 6 weeks? Why would you make any deal where you're signing off on the further wholesale destruction of Gaza 6 weeks from now? So I don't even agree with him there. I think that's a little too harsh.
There's on both sides profit from this war, but the citizens of Israel are the only people who can change it. The way you get to peace is doing a peace deal. This endless war and the endless occupation is going to prevent you from having the safe haven for Jews that you have desired and deserved all of these years.
What's funny is that Cenk has viewed himself as sort of a pugnacious fire breather type. But you put him next to Rabbi Shmuley, and he looks like the most calm, even-keeled, rational man you've ever seen, ever. So let me just show you. I'll show you a couple more real quick. But okay. So they go on to yell at each other. I think they start debating Candace Owens. It's not much of a debate. Cenk admits that some of the stuff Candace Owens said about Rabbi Shmuley was anti-Semitic. But they get into all that stuff. At the end of the interview, and I'm going to get to this in a little bit. I have two mini clips for you before we get to this one. But Piers Morgan brings on Rabbi Shmuley's daughter. The reason he brings her on is because Rabbi Shmuley's been under a lot of fire because his daughter has a sex shop and he like helps her advertise for her sex shop and has done these like social media videos where they like are talking about sex toys and shit. And everybody online is like, this is the fucking weirdest thing I've ever seen. That's your daughter, bro. Like, what are you doing? And so he brings her on later on, and oh man, is that gross. But okay, let me show you this part. It speaks for itself. Watch this.
Even if you think Hamas is in the hospital, which by the way, the IDF has never proven that in any other hospital raid that they have done. Every one of their pieces of propaganda has turned out to be a lie. Disproven every single
Did
time.
Did you just say hospital
even
rape?
If, hold on,
Did
can you
just say
let me
rape?
Finish? Piers, I gotta go.
Did this you guy say that Jews rape? Sentence.
Cenk says hospital raid and he goes, did you just say rape? Did you just say Jews rape? Oh my God. Oh, this guy is a living cartoon. All right, one more.
There is no open air concentration camp. And what you just said, that Israel killed 12,000 children and they killed them all. Hamas uses them as human shields. They are their bulletproof vests. This is a blood libel. This is rank anti-Semitism that we have suffered for 2,000 years. And Cenk, if you're too afraid to debate me, next time say no, or at least read a Wikipedia page, for God's sake.
It's blood libel, according to Rabbi Shmuley, to point out that the IDF killed, now the actual number is 15,000 children in Gaza. And I think that's a low estimate, even though that's the high one of the official numbers that have come out. We're so far behind with the capacity to keep up with this stuff. But low number 12,000, high of 15,000, probably more than that. It's anti-Semitic and it's blood libel to point that out. All right, so now buckle up. The cringe meter is about to absolutely shatter. Piers Morgan asks, what's your best-selling like sex toys to Rabbi Shmuley's daughter who runs a sex shop? Yeah, I know. I know, guys. Like, what are we doing here? But guess what? My reaction, your reaction, they're going to like try to bring Cenk into this conversation about the fucking sex toys with the father and daughter, and it is gloriously awkward. Watch this.
Sexual experience to make it more exciting, to make sex more pleasurable, last longer. And she called me, my dad, and these products filth. One word to millions of people, filth. So
look, I'm no Candace Owens fan, but it doesn't take an anti-Semite to say the father and daughter talking like sex shop shit. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of filthy, isn't it?
Well, I forgot the question. What did you ask?
Well, no, you answered the question. That's obviously one of your biggest selling lines. Okay. But Rabbi Shmuley...
Just making sure I'm asking the question. I don't want to get... Yeah.
Rabbi Shmuley, just finally, I mean, do you think there is something unholy about this, or is sex the ultimate example of good holiness?
I think that sex is the ultimate form of validation because it makes you feel desirable. It makes you feel that even when you don't have the accoutrement...
Literally the last thing any of us want is this motherfucker to talk about sex.
Of Gucci or fancy clothing, that your very body, your essence is desirable. And the greatest, the tragedy of marriage today is the loss of erotic.
Keep your eyes on Cenk's face this entire time.
Desire. It's where husbands and wives become best friends and they're no longer lovers. The average American marriage has sex 7 minutes a week, I kid you not, which includes the time the husband spends begging. 7 minutes of sex is not going to be enough for you to feel that you are more than the mother of children, but you're actually still a woman. But notice that medieval Christianity really thought that sex was only procreative and that sex is only to have babies. And she's always talking about that. But anyone who actually wants to feel that sex is fulfilling, that your erotic needs are catered.
Imagine talking like this with your daughter right there. That's mortifying.
By your wife, by your husband, so you don't have to go to the, to Pornhub or anything like that. We are weaning people off of that. We're saving marriages.
Final question on this.
One final thing to all the
All right, I just want to ask you, how much money do you make from this?
Well, you know, we not enough. The Kusher sex book sold
very
well.
John, you know, obviously, you write it. John, how much money do you make?
No,
so listen, this is my company.
Yeah. Hana, how much do we make on kosher sex? I got 9 kids, so I got to...
Rabbi Shmuley, you can interrupt Cenk and me. You can't interrupt your own daughter.
To help people...
Okay, I apologize.
Shana, how much money do you make?
Can I leave?
Yeah. You want me to tell you how much money I make?
Yes, from the sex stuff.
I mean, I make a living, thank God.
Well, millions? Or what are we talking here?
God willing. No, we're not in the millions yet. God willing.
No, no, I could say clearly, I don't make anything from it. Zero, nothing.
Okay.
And Hana's
Let me go to Cenk.
It needs to grow, and this is great exposure. Thank you.
Okay, Cenk, we've talked a lot of controversial stuff and had a vigorous debate, as always, but can we end on a point of agreement here? Do you see anything in the kosher sex business that aligns to your world values?
I couldn't care less. I'm just mainly looking forward to leaving now. Oh, no, I don't care about this topic at all. I don't care what he does with his dildos. I don't know what you want me to tell you.
Dildos? Where did dildos come?
He's so uncomfortable. Look, anybody would be in this scenario. Oh, my God.
Holy and hot.
Where did dildo? Did someone say dildos?
I don't know.
Dildos?
I don't care.
Like, you see, this is...
I don't know what you do.
Well, why did
care.
You bring it up? Wait, Cenk, I just praised you for being one of those rare people who accuse Jews of genocide.
Can I please leave? I don't
Jewish
know what sex toys
And you bring
you
up Jewish dildos?
Okay, we are going to... Why
are you bringing up sex toys you sell?
Oh, my God.
We are going to release Cenk now.
Why are you bringing up sex?
You know,
this is the thing.
He just asked Cenk, why are you bringing up sex? He's doing everything he can to not talk about it and run away.
Now, he wants to be...
Well, you know, I got
to... We got to leave it
there. Can I answer my...
I'm going to cut it off there. Oh, my God. Poor Cenk, man. Here he thinks he's going to go on Piers Morgan and have a debate with some, you know, some other guy who's parroting the Israeli line. It's Rabbi Shmuley. And then by the end of it, you have to sit there with Rabbi Shmuley and his daughter as they ask about sex toys? Bruh. So anyway, our hearts all go out to Cenk Uygur for having to endure that, but thank you for the comedy gold. So we have some absolutely giant news that came out, I think it's a couple days ago now, but I want to break it all down for you guys because it's super important. So this is in NBC. They say, Trump has been unable to get a bond for $464 million judgment, his lawyers say. In a filing to an appeals court, Trump's attorney said, getting the bond needed to halt proceedings while they appeal is a practical impossibility. So remember, we had the E. Jean Carroll case in that, because of defamation, he has to pay, I think it's $83.3 million. Now, he was able to get a bond for that one. But after that, there was the ruling in the civil case on business fraud, insurance fraud, tax fraud, things of that nature. And he's going to have to pay over $450 million for that one. And basically, no company is willing to put up the bond. So then what happens, you might be asking? Well, sit back and relax, and I'll explain it all to you. So here's what they say. Former President Trump has not been able to get a bond to secure the $464 million civil fraud judgment against him and his co-defendants, his lawyer said in a court filing Monday. Trump and his company need to post a bond for the full amount by next week in order to stop New York Attorney General Letitia James from being able to collect while he appeals. They've asked an appeals court to step in the meantime and said Monday that they had not had any success getting a bond. Quote, defendants' ongoing diligent efforts have proven that a bond in the judgment's full amount is a practical impossibility, the filing said. These diligent efforts have included approaching about 30 surety companies through 4 separate brokers. They basically went to every place that does bonds, and everyone took a look at it and was like, sorry, homie, you're on your own. Their efforts, including countless hours negotiating with one of the largest insurance companies in the world, have proven that obtaining an appeal bond in the full amount of the judgment is not possible under the circumstances presented. The other bond companies will not accept hard assets, such as real estate, as collateral, but will only accept cash or cash equivalents, such as marketable securities, the filing said. The lawyers also noted those companies typically require collateral of approximately 120% of the amount of the judgment, which would total about $557 million. In addition, sureties would likely charge bond premiums of approximately 2% per year, with 2 years in advance, an upfront cost of $18 million. The filing said that $18 million would not be recoverable even if Trump wins his appeal. In all, the filing said, the actual amount of cash or cash equivalents required to collateralize the bond and have sufficient capital to run the business and satisfy its other obligations approaches $1 billion. While the filing says Trump can't afford the bond, it also argues that the attorney general doesn't have to worry about being able to collect her judgment. Well, that makes no sense. Quote, defendants' real estate holdings, including iconic properties like 40 Wall Street, Doral Miami, and Mar-a-Lago, greatly exceed the amount of the judgment. Such assets are impossible to secrete or dispose of surreptitiously, leaving the plaintiff effectively secure during the pendency of an appeal. Trump's team also argued the $464 million penalty is grossly disproportional and cited the argument they made throughout the months-long trial that there are no victims as there were no damages and no financial losses. That's just not true. In a filing last month, Trump's lawyers asked that the bond amount be reduced to $100 million. But Monday's filing argues he shouldn't have to put up any bond at all. Wow. James' office has argued that Trump should put up the full amount. A 30-day automatic stay of the judgment handed down by Judge Arthur Engoron is set to expire March 25th. That's the big day, y'all. At which point, James would be clear to start seizing Trump's assets unless the appeals court steps in. Now, by the way, I think the appeals court is going to step in and rule one way or the other. I think. So we'll have to see. You know, what do we got, 5 days or so to find out? That's my guess. But either way, this is a huge deal. James would not need an additional court order to start collecting in New York, where Trump has his company and a large number of real estate assets. But those efforts could be complicated by any mortgages or debts he has on those properties. It's unclear what properties or assets James might look to seize. So in other words, all of these massive Trump properties, theoretically, they could start being seized in 5 days. Wow. Stephen Chung, a spokesman for Trump's campaign, said in a statement that the judgment is unjust, unconstitutional, and un-American. A bond of this size would be an abuse of the law, he said. Trump asked that if the state appellate division denies his request, the judges enter a temporary stay so he can try to make his case to the state's highest court, the Court of Appeals. Engoron handed down his judgment last month after finding Trump and his company had repeatedly committed fraud by overinflating personal financial statements that he used to secure bank loans and insurance policies. James' office said there were years when Trump's assets were overvalued by more than $2 billion. Trump maintained he did nothing wrong and testified, blah, 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 blah. You guys know the rest of it. We went through all the specifics of the case. But look, bottom line is we're looking at a potential bankruptcy. We're looking at massive, massive assets being seized. He's really up Schitt's Creek without a paddle here, man. He really is. And I am very interested in what the appeals court is going to say in this decision. But suffice to say, and look, this puts another debate to rest here. He doesn't have cash on hand of over $400 million. Now, that was something we all kind of thought and believed and were able to tease out from various news articles. But he was always insistent that he's a billionaire and also he has that sort of cash on hand. He doesn't. It's tied up, of course, in his various properties. He has a lot of these properties. It's tied up in his properties. And so he can't get a bond, which means now he either needs the appeals court to save him and kick the can down the road, or it's immediate, like within, after 5 days, a lot of his property start getting seized. Damn, man. This is a big deal. So look, yet again, I'll reiterate a very important point, which is that he had this aura of invincibility for a while, right? I mean, look at Russiagate, for example, the impeachments, which got through the House, but then failed in the Senate. But it still felt like, okay, he sort of gets away with everything, right? It's actually not like that. Now it's a total mixed bag, and sometimes he gets away with stuff, and other times he got fucking nailed on this one, man. He got nailed on this one. So let's see what the appeals court says, but they have a very small window to jump in and address it. But it is absolutely on the table that, look, if nothing changes from now, they will be seizing his assets. They will be seizing these, you know, multi-million dollar New York City Trump properties. So Wow. Now, by the way, there has been a string of polls now that have come out that show Biden is leading Trump by 2 points here, by 1 point here, by 3 points here. There was an Ipsos poll where Biden is leading Trump by 5 nationally. My speculation on those polls is what's been in the news the most recently vis-a-vis Trump is all of his legal troubles, whether it be with E. Jean Carroll or whether it be with the tax fraud, insurance fraud, business fraud case. There's been a lot of developments about how he's losing in court. And, you know, my guess is it's just a very normie instinct of like, well, smoke where there's smoke, there's fire. Looks like he did some criminal shit. So his support is dropping a little bit. Biden's is jumping up a little bit. Not because anything Biden did, right? Just because of how bad Trump is. And I think we're starting to see the effects of that. The other potential scenario, and I saw somebody point this out on Twitter earlier today, I thought it was an interesting point, is that, you know, all those traditional indicators that are always used by mainstream media to say, hey, everything's hunky-dory, everything's good, look, the stock market is up, unemployment is down. Me, personally, I don't think they're the best indicators. I don't. But at the same time, it might take 2 quarters before positive economic indicators like that are reflected in how people feel, right? And the fact of the matter is, given what the unemployment rate is and given what the stock market is doing, I've never in my lifetime seen a president with as low an approval rating as Biden has with the mainstream economic indicators that good, right? So in theory, Biden should be at least be at like 42% or so given those traditional indicators, but he hasn't been. So what's possible now is, it took 2 quarters to set in. He's getting a bump from that stuff. And then also, like I said, this is coinciding with all of Trump's legal problems. That's very possible. That's very possible. But the big guy, yet again, is in big trouble. So we got another scandal around Trump, this time involving what he said about Jewish Democrats. Headline here in Mediaite. Trump says any Jewish person who votes for Democrats should be ashamed of themselves because they hate everything about Israel. Okay, so let's play the clip. He's on, what is it? I think, Seb Gorka's radio show where 7 people in total are listening, even when the former president is on. But a lot more people have heard this clip, that's for damn sure, because this created a firestorm. Let's dive in.
Could you explain why is it seemingly that this administration, including Chuck Schumer in the Senate, hate the man that Israel chose as their prime minister? Why do the Democrats hate Bibi Netanyahu?
I love how stupid these guys are. They trick as old as can be, like a little head fake, right? Some kabuki theater. We're going to wag our finger at you publicly, Netanyahu, and say, what you're doing is bad. Stop killing all those civilians. Here's more money and more weapons to kill those civilians. Like, literally just the show of it, the theater of it, and their takeaway is, look, they really hate Netanyahu and they hate Israel. I wish they hated Netanyahu. I wish they would cut off the money and the weapons. They're not. These guys are so dumb. So, by the way, what's happening now is the Republicans, including Trump, they're looking at what's happening with Israel and Gaza and the U.S. and our support of them. And they're pivoting to the right of the Democrats and saying, how dare you hold Netanyahu back? How dare you hold Israel back? How dare you tell them that they should stop killing civilians? What's wrong with you? You need to support them killing civilians harder. Like, that's where they are on this.
I actually think they hate Israel.
Yes.
I don't think they hate it. I think they hate Israel. And the Democrat Party hates Israel. And the Democrat Party, if you remember when many Israeli representatives, including Netanyahu, when they came to the country trying, begging, at that time President Obama, please don't make the Iran nuclear deal, which is a disaster and was a disaster. And I ended it. But unfortunately, they didn't do anything with the ending of it.
You ended the Iran nuclear deal. Joe Biden ran saying, I'm going to get us back in. Then he didn't get us back in. He agreed 100% with your policy. So any criticism of him is criticism of you on this, because he's doing exactly what you did.
And would have had a new deal made with Iran. It would have been good for everybody, and there would have been no nuclear weapons.
That was the original deal, you fuck. Ugh. He's saying, I'm going to rip up the Iran deal and then do a new deal where they don't get nuclear weapons. The old deal made sure they didn't get nuclear weapons, and it was verified by the IAEA 12 times. You absolute jackass. He just says shit. Like, he just says shit. There's no connection to reality.
Very close to getting a nuclear weapon right now.
Yeah. Oh, gee, I wonder why that is. They're very close to getting a nuclear weapon. Gee, I wonder why that is. Could it be because of your dumbass policy that ripped up the agreement which prevented them from getting a nuclear weapon? You absolute colossal moron.
I really believe they hate Israel, and they also see a lot of votes. Don't forget, when you see those Palestinian marches, even I'm amazed at how many people are in those marches.
I'm amazed at how many people are against genocide. It's kind of incredible. Like, all these people don't want to see babies get carpet bombed. Who knew? Who knew?
And to him, it's votes. I think it's votes more than anything else, because he was always pro-Israel. He's very anti-Israel now. Any Jewish person that votes for Democrats hates their religion. They hate everything about Israel, and they should be ashamed of themselves.
Okay, let's be clear about this. What he just said is anti-Semitic. Not even close. The implication that all Jews must be completely loyal to the insane right-wing ethno-state theocracy of Israel, that implicate that they're one and the same. This country committing a genocide and Jews, full stop, are the same. That's anti-Semitism. That's anti-Semitism. And you should be ashamed of yourself if you're a Jewish Democrat. You hate your religion if you're a Jewish Democrat. Crystal made a good point about this. You know what it reminded her of? Remember when Biden spoke to Charlemagne the God and said, if you don't support me, you ain't black. This is similar to that, except I'd argue this is worse than that. Jesus Christ.
Israel will be destroyed. You have Iran now making a nuclear weapon. None of that would have happened with me. That's a big thing. With me, Iran was broke. They were absolutely stone-cold broke. There was no terrorism because they didn't have money to fund Hamas and Hezbollah and the other 28 groups. They had no money. They were stone-cold broke.
He's the reason why Iran is closer to getting a nuclear weapon. He ended the peace deal. Biden continued his dumbass policy. And as you can see here, Trump's argument is Chuck Schumer, Joe Biden, and the Democrats are not giving Netanyahu enough of what he wants, are not cucking themselves to Israel enough. Hey, I know you're giving the money and the weapons, but would you please stop criticizing them? Because it looks to me like you hate them. Yeah, I'm sure. By giving them billions of dollars in money and weapons and giving them a green light to do their genocide behind the scenes. Yeah, that's the problem. The problem is we're too hard on them. That's the problem. What is there to say? There's this giant open political lane right now for a candidate to say, hey, America first. Stop giving money and weapons to a country that's carpet bombing babies. Let's rebuild Flint, Michigan and the water pipes as opposed to carpet bombing children. Wide open lane. What does he do? Swing and a miss. Total whiff. You know what? Biden's too tough on Israel, and so is Schumer, and they're too critical of Netanyahu. And if you're a Jewish Democrat, you should be ashamed and you hate your religion. Jesus Christ, man. Jesus Christ. That's some disgusting shit. That's some disgusting shit. So for anybody who was dumb or naive enough to think like, oh yeah, no, Trump is going to be more anti-war. Trump will get a deal. His previous commentary on this was Israel needs to, quote, finish the problem, finish the job. So what does that mean? It means like hurry up and wrap it up and get your ethnic cleansing and your genocide done. Jared Kushner was just at some college event the other day, and he was talking about the tremendous opportunity of the waterfront property in Gaza. Like, man, there's some real potential there. We just got to clean up Gaza, and then that waterfront property is very valuable. So again, it's let's speed up the ethnic cleansing. Let's stop criticizing the Israeli government. And also, let's conflate all Jews with the actions of a genocidal regime. That is anti-Semitism 101. So the very well-known neocon warmonger, Ben Shapiro, decided to chime in on the Democrats' policy towards Israel, you know, specifically Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden's posture towards Israel in recent days. Now, again, for those of you who don't know, or you may not have been keeping up with every twist and turn, Chuck Schumer went on the floor of the Senate and basically said, look, Netanyahu's got to go. And people who are not well-versed in politics looked at that like, oh, man, this is the U.S. is really standing up to Israel with their, you know, killing of innocent civilians in Gaza. No, the reality is, if they wanted to stand up to Israel and get them to stop killing civilians, they would cut off the money, They would cut off the weapons. They would condemn them at the UN. They'd be talking about potential sanctions over top Israeli government officials. That's not happening. None of that is happening. So the reality is this is political theater. It's kabuki theater. It's a way to make it look like Democrats are doing something when in reality it's just more of the continued like finger wagging, like we're not in favor of all the war crimes. So that's what it is. But to somebody like Ben Shapiro, even that, even the political theater is a bridge too far. How dare you not go in lockstep with Netanyahu and Israel every single step of the way? So I'm going to show you a clip here from Ben Show. This is in Mediaite. Asinine, Ben Shapiro unloads on senile old dotard Biden over his message to Israel. This is really something. Let's watch.
The White House said, as anti-Semitic crimes and acts of hate have increased around the world, among them the deadliest attack committed against the Jewish people since the Holocaust, leaders have an obligation to call hate what it is and bring Americans together against it. There is no justification for spreading toxic, false stereotypes that threaten fellow citizens. Like President Biden said, he was moved to run for president when he saw neo-Nazis chanting the same anti-Semitic bile that was heard in Germany in the 1930s in Charlottesville. Weird, he has had nothing to say about hundreds of thousands of pro-Hamas American citizens chanting anti-Semitic bile. That's not just reminiscent of the 1930s. It is identical to the stuff being chanted.
What he's saying is, oh yeah, Biden, you condemned neo-Nazis in Charlottesville. Why didn't you condemn pro-Palestine protesters who aren't even close to Nazis? What's the massive, egregious thing that they chanted? From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. I know you want to conflate that with Nazism and genocide, but you're just wrong. You're just wrong. You talk to those people and they'll tell you in no uncertain terms, I mean, I want a democracy, equal protection for everybody, civil rights for everybody, voting rights for everybody. I want Israelis and Palestinians to live in peace side by side. So what's the, and by the way, what did he call these hundreds of thousands of protesters? His words, not mine. What do you call them? Pro-Hamas. Really, Ben? I know you like to suck yourself off from time to time about how you're an honest debater and you like to steel man your opponent's perspective and not straw man their perspective. Really? Hundreds of thousands of pro-Hamas Americans marching in the street? No. These are people who want Israel to stop carpet bombing civilians. You know that's what they believe. You know that's what they're talking about. But you smear them. They're pro-Hamas. They're just like Nazis. How dare Biden criticize actual Nazis, but not pro-Palestine folks who want to stop the bombing of babies? What a joke, man. What a sick, sick person.
That dude is trying to win those votes in Michigan. He's trying to win the votes of people who love Hamas in Dearborn, Michigan. That is what Joe Biden is trying to do.
They love Hamas. Look at how loose he plays with this. It's a disgusting smear. It's also, by the way, an Islamophobic smear. Just because they're Muslims, just because they want to protect Palestinian civilians, they are pro-Hamas. I mean, pathetic.
Now, and he has the gall to suggest that Donald Trump is an anti-Semite? Truly? That's the direction?
Well, Ben, we just went through it. Trump said, any Jewish person who votes for Democrats should be ashamed of themselves because they hate everything about Israel. So Trump is determining who is and isn't a real Jew, right? Sort of like when Biden said, you ain't black if you don't vote for me. And also implying that Jewish people have to be pro-Israel because they're one and the same. That is anti-Semitic. Saying all Jewish people need to agree with and are responsible for the actions of a right-wing genocidal government, that is anti-Semitic. Stop acting like, oh, how dare you say he's anti-Semitic. Well, he shouldn't have said something that is colossally anti-Semitic. He drives me crazy. He drives me crazy with his idiocy. And he thinks he's so smart and he talks really fast and that's supposed to trick you into thinking, oh my God, he must be making good points. He's not.
He's literally doing this, by the way, at the same time that he is putting significant pressure on Benjamin Netanyahu not to finish off genocidal anti-Semites in Rafah.
I have to pause every 5 seconds because he keeps saying insane things. So to Ben, how dare Biden say to Netanyahu, hey, shouldn't really do this Rafah thing. You've already killed a lot of civilians. This'll kill way more civilians because there's over 1 million Palestinians in Rafah, the only place that Israel said, hey, this is relatively safe, even though it's not. They've been attacking there. They've been bombing there. They say, hey, go here so you're safe. There's 1 million people there. over 1 million people. There are 30,000 Hamas members. And Israel's like, oh, we're going to go in and you know, ground invade Rafah and level Rafah. And the fact that Biden's like, I'm not sure you should do that, by the way. Is Biden going to cut off the money and the weapons and make sure they don't do that? No. But the fact that he's like, hey, by the way, just, you know, stop killing babies. Ben's like, how dare you support the bombing of babies? Cuck yourself to Netanyahu and don't you dare criticize. What a loser. Jesus.
Israel has successfully pushed Hamas away from Gaza City, away from Khan Yunis, and the final city, they have apparently four battalions of Hamas terrorists in there.
Made up.
Is Rafah.
No evidence. Totally made up. Totally made up. 92% of the people killed by Israel are Palestinian civilians. There's 15,000 children who are dead. There's 40,000 Palestinians overall, according to EuroMedMonitor, the human rights group. The idea, oh, in our very highly targeted, specific hunt for Hamas, we've been able to track down four battalions to this area in Rafah, so we're going to go in there and surgically remove them. If you think that's the case, you're either a liar, and you don't think it's the case, or you're the biggest dupe in the world.
The way that those terrorists will be eliminated is with a military incursion into Rafah. Everyone knows this.
Oh, everybody knows. Everybody knows. You have to go into the place with over a million people jammed together in an area the size of LAX airport and start shooting all over the place. Everybody knows this. Everybody knows this. By the way, this level of certitude and smugness he brought every step of the way defending George W. Bush's illegal and offensive war in Iraq. A war that now, in retrospect, almost everybody agrees this was the dumbest thing ever. It was a war crime. It was offensive. He was defending that every step of the way. Now he's doing the exact same thing with Israel's ethnic cleansing and genocide. Okay, this doesn't play well right now. Do you have any idea how this is going to age in 10 years? Somebody looks back at this segment. It's like, oh, so you're just genocidal. That's just what you are, Ben.
Is trying to pressure Israel into not doing that. Why? Because Joe Biden desperately wants to win those votes in Dearborn, Michigan. He thinks he's going to lose the election if he loses Michigan. And for some odd reason, he thinks he's losing Michigan because not enough Arab Americans are going
to
vote for him.
So to Ben, it would be a problem if Biden tries gently to stop a genocide because he wants to get the votes of the Muslims in Michigan. But it is not a problem to Ben that AIPAC spends tens of millions or over $100 million buying Democrats and Republicans so that they do extremist Israeli policies and back them and arm them and fund them, no matter what they do, no matter how brutal the occupation is, no matter how many civilians they kill. To him, this is like, oh my God, you're corrupting our democratic process by trying to get the votes of Muslim Americans. So why wouldn't it be corrupting the democratic process to try to cater to a foreign government? Israel, through AIPAC and DMFI. I don't know how anybody can watch this shit at this point in time and take this shit seriously. The argument from Ben is quite literally, shut the fuck up, keep sending money, and keep sending weapons to Israel. And as you do it, you better put a smile on your face and not criticize in any way, shape, or form to try to maybe take the rough edges off of the massacres of civilians, to try to maybe reel it in a little bit with the wanton violations of international law. Shut up. Send the money, send the weapons, don't complain. How dare America try to steer policy when they're our fucking colonial outpost and we give them billions of dollars in weapons and money? This is his argument. So who do you think's in control, Ben? Who do you think's in control? Who do you want to be in control? You want Biden to cuck himself to Netanyahu? The fact of the matter is, he supports Netanyahu no matter what he says. He supports the Israeli government no matter what he says. And he's outright in favor of this ethnic cleansing and genocide. I mean, it's very, very straightforward. It's very straightforward. So he takes one of the things about Biden where, at least in rhetoric, he's way better than the Republicans, and he's like, how dare you be better in rhetoric? Shut up and support the genocide and support Netanyahu and just keep sending the money and don't you dare criticize. No, Ben, don't you dare criticize. How about that? It's our money. It's my money going to pay for the carpet bombing of children. You're damn right I want strings attached to that so it doesn't go to carpet bombing children or invading Rafah. Shit, we've gone through the numbers, guys. Over 70% of the humanitarian aid is being blocked by Israel. That itself is a war crime. People are eating weeds to survive. They're drinking seawater to survive. You have children getting limbs amputated with no anesthesia. There's at least a quarter of the population is fucking starving. They're still doing a medieval siege. No food, no fuel, no water, no electricity for 2.3 million people. He looks at all of that and he goes, I support it and don't you dare criticize it. What an absolute scumbag. What an absolute scumbag. Some fucking nerve on this guy. Some nerve. Gotta send your money, gotta send your weapons, and don't you dare criticize. How about no? How about you piss off? How about we should cut off the money, we should cut off the weapons, we should absolutely sanction Israel, we should condemn them at the UN. Shit, we should lock up Netanyahu and Ben-Gvir and Smotrich and the top generals who are facilitating this genocide. They are war criminals, out and out. That's what should happen. But you can rest assured, Ben Shapiro heard those words I just spoke. He would have one response. One response. You all know it, say it with me. You're an anti-Semite for saying that. Spare me, Ben. Spare me. So the other day, we talked about how John Barnett is the Boeing whistleblower. He was basically telling his story and giving all the specifics about how Boeing cuts corners, uses the wrong parts, speeds up the process to care more about profit than they care about safety. So this guy was spilling all the tea, exposing all of the dirty laundry of Boeing. Now, he already had spoken a number of times. He was given a deposition. He spoke a couple days, but he wasn't finished. He had more to say in the deposition. Now, and so as you all know, because we discussed it, he was found dead on the morning he was going to keep giving his deposition. Listen to this. Boeing whistleblower John Barnett, here's our update, was planning to drive home to Louisiana after his deposition on Friday, on March 8th, before Boeing lawyers asked him to stay one more day to finish his testimony. Boeing lawyers asked him to stay one more day to finish his testimony, and he was found dead on that morning. So this was one of the updates that when everybody sees it, they go, All we had was speculation previously that, like, it's kind of questionable. I don't think this guy killed himself, right? All we have is speculation. All we have is a hunch. All we have is a circumstantial evidence type situation, right? No hard evidence. But then we get this story, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, we're kind of getting into Epstein territory here, where it's like, there's a lot of indicators that that guy didn't kill himself, right? But then I got one more for you. I got one more for you. So this is a local news ABC affiliate. And listen to what they say.
Tonight, our investigative reporter Ann Emerson has new information in the death of Boeing whistleblower John Barnett. A close family friend of Barnett says he predicted he might wind up dead, that a story could surface that he killed himself. But he told her, don't believe it. Ann?
Tessa, Barnett's family friend Jennifer said they had talked about this exact scenario playing out. But his words seemed like a premonition. He told her, don't ever believe it.
I knew John because his mom and my mom are best friends. And so over the years, get-togethers, birthdays, celebrations, and, you know, whatnot, we've all got together and talked. And, you know, that's how we really know each other.
And when Jennifer needed help one day, Barnett came by to see her. They talked about his upcoming depositions in Charleston. Jennifer knew he filed an extremely damaging complaint against Boeing. He says the aerospace giant retaliated against him when he blew the whistle on unsafe practices. For more than 30 years, Barnett was a quality manager. He'd recently retired and moved back to look after his mom in Louisiana.
He wasn't concerned about safety because I asked him, I said, aren't you scared? And he said, and his voice and the way he would talk, no, I ain't scared. He said, but if anything happens to me, it's not suicide. You know, I know that he did not commit suicide. There's no way. He loved life too much. He loved his family too much. He loved his brothers too much to put them through what they're going through right now.
And he basically told you not to believe it.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Not true. He's got too much to do. Likes breathing. And he did. He had a lot of plans and things that he wanted to do.
What do you think happened?
I think somebody got in there and made, you know, money can buy anything nowadays, it seems like. And there's a lot of evil in this world. I think somebody didn't like what he had to say and wanted to shut him up and didn't want it to come back on anyone. So that's why they made it look like a suicide.
The last time she saw Barnett, it was at her father's funeral in late February. He was one of the pallbearers. Sometimes family and friends refer to him by his middle name, Mitch.
I think everybody is in disbelief and can't believe it. And I told everybody that I don't care what they say. I know that Mitch didn't do that.
And just because John Mitch Barnett is dead doesn't mean this case won't move forward. His attorneys say they're still prepared to go to trial in June.
What am I supposed to say in response to this? How am I supposed to talk about this, right? And then you worry that if you draw obvious conclusions that you're going to, like, violate YouTube's terms of service, get in trouble, right? Like, this is a local news report. This isn't Kyle talking. This wasn't me doing all different sorts of speculation. This is that dude's friend who was saying he wouldn't kill himself. He's not the type to do that. He literally said, if I'm dead, it wasn't suicide. Guys, he blew the whistle on a lot of incredible things. I think there's a documentary out about this guy already. I saw one of the guys from the Vanguard podcast tweeting about it, that this guy's like a total aviation nerd, and he just wanted to make sure that the planes were safe for people. There were planes where they would literally go and take spare parts out of the garbage and use it for the Boeing planes. And now we've seen 1,000 different stories of, like, the Boeing door gets ripped off in the middle of a flight. There's a giant hole in the plane, right? Landing gear failed. A wheel fell off. We had that problem a while ago where they tinkered with what the design was supposed to be. The sensor was in the wrong place, and a number of Boeing planes just plummeted out of the air and crashed. We're talking about a company that looks like they sincerely don't give a fuck about safety. And then now the chickens are coming home to roost. And this guy was trying to say, hey man, I'm in there at the ground level. I see what's going on. Taking spare parts out of fucking garbage cans, using like dish soap for certain things to lubricate when you shouldn't. Like, what are we talking about here? By the way, I need to point this out. Administration after administration in this country has sort of leaned into deregulating the airline industry more and more. And by the way, we just bailed out, wasn't it over $50 billion we bailed out the airline industry during COVID? And now, a couple years later, the planes are fucking falling out of the air? Isn't that what happened? I got a dog dreaming next to me and making noises. I don't know if you guys can hear it. I don't know if this mic picks it up. Anyway, airline deregulation. How'd that work out? This is like the prime example of sometimes you need safety regulations to make sure that corners aren't cut for profit and people are safe. So the hardcore libertarian philosophy of like, always less government, it has never been proven so hard to be incorrect. But here we are. Here we are. So rest in peace to this guy. Lord only knows if the police are going to crack the case. Lord only knows. Who knows? It's possible that there were some payoffs made to them, right? So that they keep their fucking mouth shut. This is a corrupt-ass world we live in. As that woman said, with a lot of evil. Who knows if we'll ever get conclusive answers, but just like with Jeffrey Epstein, there's enough dots there to connect where everybody kind of knows, right? Like JFK. Over 50% of Americans still think the official story doesn't make any goddamn sense. There's only so much you can get by people. And this one is really over the line. So the Supreme Court decided to do a very Supreme Court type thing. They made a horrible and insane decision on immigration that I'm going to walk you through. But keep in mind, as we're going through this, there's another giant twist coming in the story. Okay, and we'll get to that too. So this is in the Associated Press from yesterday. Supreme Court lifts stay on Texas law that gives police broad powers to arrest migrants at the border. So it was divided. I believe there were three justices who were against this, but the others were in favor of it. And they said, Texas is trying to enforce their own immigration law. And anybody who they suspect, round up, check, and then ship out if they want to ship it out. And they're being very aggressive. They put up like barbed wire buoys and shit like that. And the Supreme Court here said, yeah, you're allowed to do that. Now, why is that a problem? It's a problem because when you look at precedent, and when you look at the history of case law, it's been reaffirmed over and over again that border policy is clearly in the purview of federal policy. And so, for example, and they go on to explain this in this article too, by the way, there was a Supreme Court case in 2012 where Arizona passed this law called, like, show me your papers law, right? Or at least that's what people called it. And they were trying also to enforce their own border policy, and they were becoming incredibly harsh, cracking down. You know, basically, it was like free license to harass people who have a slightly darker skin complexion, and they could, and they tried to deport people themselves. They tried to crack down on the border. And the Supreme Court said at the time in 2012, by the way, still a conservative Supreme Court at the time, they said, look, our hands are tied here. The Supremacy Clause of the Constitution is clear. The border is solely in the purview of the federal government. You can't have state border policy superseding federal border policy. So in other words, this is on Border Patrol. This is on the federal government. The state cannot override the federal government. The federal government says, hey, don't do that. You're getting in our way and interfering with the way we do this. They have to stop. And one of the biggest problems is a lot of the people at the state level who try to enforce this, they don't know all of the ins and outs of border law. They don't know what is acceptable and is unacceptable. Whereas the ones that are federally trained do know more of that. So in 2012, it was upheld. Very clear-cut case, Supremacy Clause of the Constitution. Arizona can't override the federal government when it comes to border policy. Now, Texas is trying to do the same thing, and the Supreme Court stepped in to say, at least temporarily, yes, you can go and enforce your Texas border law. So let me read you some of this. A divided Supreme Court on Tuesday lifted a stay on a Texas law that gives police broad powers to arrest migrants suspected of crossing the border illegally, while a legal battle over immigration authority plays out. The Biden administration is suing to strike down the measure, arguing it's a clear violation of federal authority that would hurt international relations and create chaos in administering immigration law. Texas has argued it has a right to take action over what authorities have called an ongoing crisis at the southern border. Opponents say the law, known as Senate Bill 4, the most dramatic attempt by a state to police immigration since an Arizona law more than a decade ago, portions of which were struck down by the Supreme Court. Critics have also said the Texas law could lead to civil rights violations and racial profiling. A federal judge in Texas struck down the law in late February, but the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals quickly stayed the ruling, leading the federal government to appeal to the Supreme Court. So what the Supreme Court did is they said, and the three that dissented, Ketanji Brown Jackson, Elena Kagan, and Sonia Sotomayor, and Sotomayor wrote a blistering dissent. But they said, look, we are going to make it so that Texas is allowed to do this, but we're also going to throw it back to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals for them to make a decision. Then, massive twist in the case, boom, this morning. Texas immigration law back on hold after appeals court ruling. Texas's strict new immigration law giving state police powers to arrest people on suspicion of illegally crossing the Mexico border was back on hold late Tuesday, hours after the U.S. Supreme Court allowed it to take effect. A federal appeals court temporarily blocked the law, known as SB 4, from taking effect in a 2-1 order late Tuesday. The Supreme Court's majority ruling didn't uphold the law, but briefly cleared the way for the state to begin enforcing the measure. That was until the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals temporarily put the law back on hold ahead of hearing legal challenges against it on Wednesday. One panel member, Circuit Judge Andrew Oldham, dissented, saying, I would leave that stay in place pending tomorrow's oral arguments on the question. The law was challenged by the Department of Justice over concerns that it encroached on the federal government's authority over immigration and by immigration advocacy organizations that have said it could lead to racial profiling. The Supreme Court's decision marked a victory for Texas Governor Greg Abbott and his fellow Republicans who have made the recent increase in illegal crossings at the U.S.-Mexico border a central issue in the 2024 elections. So that's the gist of it. The Supreme Court stepped in and said, all right, we're going to allow the law to stand, at least temporarily, then threw it back to the Fifth Circuit Court. The Fifth Circuit Court said, no, we're going to stay them enforcing this law, and now the case will proceed. But this has already given me massive red flag vibes here, because I can't wrap my mind around the Supreme Court saying it's okay to enforce this law in the meantime. Because we have history that we know this exact kind of fight has been had before, and the states were slapped down. So I sort of shudder at the thought of what's going to happen with this law. But remember, guys, we also had a similar case very recently where it was the same thing, and the Supreme Court ruled incorrectly. So now, final point is, if they end up at the place where they say, yes, Texas state law overrides federal law when it comes to immigration, if that's where they end up, I don't want to hear another fucking word about originalism from conservatives and Republicans ever again. Because they are not originalists. They are not, let's go by the plain face text of the Constitution, let's interpret it as the founders meant it, because that would be, they would be 100% endorsing the opposite philosophy of like living, breathing document. Basically, you know, loosely interpret the Supreme Court to see what can the government do and not do. You know, it's something that evolves over time, and we're deciding that these words on the page that don't actually matter insofar as they're strictly written. So they would be adopting what they often called the activist judge position. They would be the activists in this scenario. So we'll see what happens. But the fact that we're even having this conversation, the fact that we're even debating this, the fact that this case has gone this far is honestly absolutely insane. So I'm sure you guys remember, it was not that long ago that Katie Porter lost her election to Adam Schiff and what was his name? Garvey, the MAGA candidate in California. They have what's called a jungle primary. So the Democrats and the Republicans run together in the primary and the top two vote getters move on to the general election. So Katie Porter and Barbara Lee ended up not making the cut. It's a goddamn shame. They should have been more strategic. They should have gotten together. They should have picked one of them and then they would have had a chance if they did that, right? They didn't do that. But in the aftermath of Schiff and Garvey making it to the next round, Katie Porter tweeted that, you know, look, proud of what we did here, proud of, and thank you to everybody who voted for us, and it's a shame that this government was rigged by billionaires pumping in their big money. Something to that effect. I mean, I'm paraphrasing there, but that's the gist of it. Well, you would think that she nuked Hiroshima and Nagasaki again, based on the reaction from all the, you know, polite liberal media types. They were furious. And they were furious because they play this game where they go, you sound like Trump when you say that. You don't say that. That makes us sound like MAGA. That makes us sound like election deniers. That really got under my skin because everybody understands the context of what she was saying and what she meant. And what, are we supposed to just like never use the word rigged in politics again now because Trump tainted it by using it incorrectly? Apparently that's their position. So Katie Porter goes on the Pod Save America podcast, which, by the way, I think she probably thought, I'm going into friendly territory. You know, these guys are all Obama era alums, however you say it. I don't know. I don't care. And they're like sort of milquetoast Democrats. But, you know, every now and then they play sympathetic to the more fire-breathing, left-leaning politicians. But they're going to ask her, they're going to mock her to her face here, what you're about to see, okay? And this is basically like, you know, apologize. Bend the knee. Say that all of us, you know, elite, smug, snide, liberal pricks were correct to pile on after you said the word rigged. This really infuriated me. And she plays along. I think it's pathetic, but she ends up playing along. Let's watch and then we'll react.
You got in some controversy when you exited the race by using the word rigged to describe it. How do we stop the steal? Is Hugo Chavez involved?
So in other words, it's a joke comparing her directly to Trump. It's like, oh, right, you're saying stop the steal. And, you know, MAGA said that Hugo Chavez flipped the votes in the voting machines. You guys know the Smartmatic, Dominion, all these things that they would lean into. They're comparing her directly to Trump, mocking her to her face. It's a joke, but the core of the joke is, why would you use that language and be like them?
How do we stop the steal? Is Hugo Chavez involved? And how do we stop him?
So obviously, I wish I had chosen a different word.
No, Katie. No, don't do this. Don't do this. I hate it when people cave and give in to bad faith attacks. And make no mistake about it, this was a flat out bad faith attack. It was the attempt to do the enlightened centrist tap dance to say, we're holier than thou. We're not like the other side. We make sure we never question anything ever about elections ever, ever, ever. But that's just dumb. Billionaires do rig elections with the colossal amount of money that they pump in.
Obviously, I wish I had chosen a different word. Because what happened with the controversy was it took away from two really important truths. One, our California election officials do a terrific job.
Oh,
I have been through competitive...
Nobody questioned that. You didn't question that. Oh, why are you pretending like that interpretation is a good faith interpretation from people?
...where it has taken days to count. And so I have tremendous respect for them. So want to really make clear that at no time and in no way would I ever suggest that there's anything other than a careful, thoughtful, amazing election system that actually should be the model for a lot of the country, in my opinion. The second truth that is really important that got lost in all of that is that big money does influence our elections. Outcomes are manipulated and distorted when you have people coming in spending millions and millions of dollars at the last minute, and that money is not disclosed until after the election, so people don't know about it. They can't take it into account when they vote. And we're already seeing, like with this Fair Shake PAC, they're making noises about threatening Sherrod Brown, John Tester. These are people who are not necessarily interested in making sure Democrats have the majority and we can stand up to Donald Trump. They have a very different agenda than I feel like this entire race should have been about.
And by the way, she's even soft pedaling it. She's being too nice. As we discussed, what Adam Schiff did is he helped to fund the MAGA opponent. Millions of dollars for the MAGA opponent. The whole idea is boost his profile as much as possible. Give him more money than he would ever get on his own, more advertising than he would ever get on his own, so that you spur the MAGA folks in California. Now, you say California is overwhelmingly liberal. True, but stop and think about it. On the liberal side, they're splitting their vote three or four different ways, maybe even more than that. So Schiff literally didn't care if this guy, Garvey, beat him in the primary, because it doesn't matter. Once you get to the general, he would be in second place. So it'd be him versus the MAGA guy in the general. He knows he's going to beat the MAGA guy in freaking California, one of the bluest states. So it was a dirty, sleazy trick. To be clear, it is not illegal. Nobody's claiming it's illegal. But it is just dirty, sleazy, gutter politics. It's cheap tricks to try to get ahead, is what it is. She didn't even bring that up here, right? If you're asking me, and I'm in her shoes, of course I'd fucking bring that up. And then, of course, I would have doubled down on the rig point vis-a-vis billionaires. Yes, you can't have dark money coming in. Forget dark money. I even hate it when people just say dark money. Money, period. Money, period. Dark just means they don't disclose who it is. Even if they disclose who it is, it doesn't make it good. Doesn't mean that, hey, Boeing spent $1 million in this race, and we know it was Boeing. Oh, so now it's okay? No, it's still bad, even if you know it. Even if it's light money, not dark money, it's still bad. So her point was, yeah, this election was swayed by big money. Guys, this is an old statistic I'm going off of. It may even be higher now, but when it comes to the House and the Senate, it's over 92% of the time the person that raises the most money ends up winning. Why? Because they go out there, they could, you know, do more mailers, they can do more ads, their name is bigger in the conversation, the media takes you more seriously when you raise a lot of money. That's a disgrace. Because that's the incentive structure of the system is the biggest sellout is always the favorite. If anything, I'd like it the exact opposite way. But that's not how it is. And so she calls that out and people pretend like she was saying some Donald Trump shit of the voting machines were hacked and they flipped it and they were all voting for me, but they voted for Schiff because of the cheating. And she didn't say that. Everybody knows she didn't say that. Everybody knows she didn't mean that. This is a stupid, bad faith, fake controversy. And she just semi gave in to the bad faith attacks. And the fucking Pod Save Bros are pathetic for helping to push that. Yeah, I know, the corporate media jackals, the Jake Tappers of the world, Adam Schiff, like they had a field day with, oh, us Democrats are better than this. We want to totally ban the word rigged in politics always and forever because Trump used it incorrectly. But that's stupid. That's stupid. And by the way, those are the same people who bemoan the idea of people doing both sides-ism, false equivalency. Oh yeah, there's good and bad on both sides. There's mostly bad on both sides, right? This is the ultimate false equivalence. This is the ultimate both sides bullshit. There is no analogy, there's no comparison between Katie Porter correctly saying billionaires rig elections and Donald Trump lying about him winning the election. He didn't win it. He didn't win it. Voting machines weren't hacked. There's been lawsuits over that, and the voting machine companies are winning. He did over 60 court cases, lost. Right? We don't need to go through all this. You guys know Hugo Chavez had nothing to do with it. Maduro had nothing to do with it. all the claims they made about, oh my God, the late night vote dumps and it flips. Hey, idiots, it was the order that they counted the votes in many of these states. On the day, Trump did better. The mail-in, Biden did better. Some states counted mail-in second. Yeah, and those states are going to look like he surges and comes back to win. That's just the way it works. The red mirage scenario, we talked about that. That's what ended up unfolding. They used that to claim it's rigged. It's not rigged. But when Katie says it's rigged, she's 100% correct. And nobody is being honest about that. So, pathetic. Pod save rose or losers. Katie shouldn't have even given in as much as she did. And I think that conclusion is clear. All right, guys. That's all I got for you today. I love y'all very much. You guys know the drill. Everybody, please subscribe to the channel. Click that bell icon so you get a notification every single time a video drops. You can leave a like, leave a comment, all that fun stuff. Thank you to everybody who supports this show on Patreon. Please consider supporting. If you're not, that link is below. $5 a month goes a very, very long way. And remember, I never talk to advertisers. Don't do any ad reads or any of that stuff. We're not like the Daily Wire and Ben Shapiro, where he talks for like 3.5 minutes and he has to do a 30-second or minute long ad. He squeezes like two ads into a 12-minute long video. Pathetic. Disgusting. We're not like that. I don't want to be like that. We're never going to be like that. But that means we rely on your guys' support, small dollar donations, whether tipping on YouTube with the thanks button or supporting on Patreon. And that's all I got for you. Everybody, enjoy the rest of your day. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Much love.